Toronto! I wonder if they can hear it on Long Island.
Great move. What a goal. Beauty. Austin Matthews.
Bless you, boys. What a game.
Welcome to episode 66 of the Maple Leaf Hot Stove podcast. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Anthony Petrielli. Anthony, I don't know if I'd say we've been banging the drum more than anyone else for the spread of the Maple Leafs top fours, but it's something that we've talked about consistently over the course of the season. And lo and behold, Mitch Marner comes back, and instead of the expected move of putting him alongside Austin Matthews and kind of reuniting that combo for the end of the season, potentially into the playoffs, we get a spread of these top four guys with Matthews, Bertuzzi, and Domi, Marner joining Tavares on the second line, and then a third line featuring William Nylander, Pontus Holmberg, and Matthew Knies, and then later Nick Robertson. Anthony, what is your first impression of the results of this experiment that we've, like I said, kind of been asking for a while now?
So it's kind of greater than the overall configuration. The first impression is honestly Sheldon Keefe. Good job. You know, I think when it came out, a lot of people were very quick to say, you know, first sign of danger, he's flipping it back. And there have honestly been over the past three games, you know, they were tie game with Pitt late, and that Jersey game was a one goal game going into the third. There were times where even I was sitting there going, all right, put you know, the big guys together for a shift or two here and see if you can rip one. And he hasn't. And kudos to him. He's giving it a real run. I know that's easier said than done when there's essentially very little pressure on the team right now. I don't want to blow it out of proportion. I know that they obviously have a playoff spot locked in. But there were definitely opportunities as a competitor within a game where he easily could have looked and said, I'm going to put my absolute best foot forward and do that. And I think that just speaks to one other thing that we've talked about, which is I think Sheldon Keefe has made some noticeable changes this year. I think he's been more vocal after post games. I think he's been a lot more direct addressing issues. I think when he has been pointed at times, he hasn't walked it back as he has in previous years. I think he's been more fed up with nonsense behavior from the team than he has in previous years. There's been so many times over the last couple seasons where I've, you know, I think we've all kind of sat there and said, these guys are getting away with murder in the way that they're playing. And to me, you know, I know a lot of it will inevitably go back to his hand was forced due to injury, and more so than it was an epiphany. And I get that, but there were some signs before. You know, there was the Jets game, for example, where they gave up the 2-on-0 and he just said, absolutely, you know, he lost his mind on the bench and sat the guys. To me, that was the kind of thing that was absolutely not happening in previous seasons. Like, he was legitimately benching their star players when they were underperforming. And I think he definitely got a bit of a nudge from the injuries, but he easily could have reverted back at any point, and he hasn't. And I think this has been Sheldon Keefe's best season coaching the Leafs.
He certainly had a higher degree of difficulty than he's had at times. Like, the story of these four guys and them being the center of this team, a part of that story is that outside of Matthews, like, they've been pretty durable. Like, a lot of times it has been something he's been able to rely on, is kind of just throwing those two lines out, throwing them for a lengthy period of time. You know, Tavares used to be able to eat more minutes than he does now. I mean, some of that is with this more balanced lineup, just everyone is getting fewer minutes. But if you look at Tavares's ice time in recent weeks, you're seeing a lot of the, you know, 16, 17 minutes, things like that. And the injuries have played a factor. The defense mix-up has played a factor. You know, that I don't necessarily want to give credit to Brad Treliving out of nowhere, but when you do have a new boss, like, people can relate. If you have a new boss, you have new directives, like, you might act in a different way. And it's hard to separate what a coach does from what a front office wants sometimes, because at the end of the day, a coach is sort of middle management. And so we don't know to what degree, Dubas said this and he liked this and Keefe knew that X would make him happy, or with Treliving. Like, we tend to treat coaches as independent actors, but again, like people in almost any other line of work, the way they go about their business is affected by the structure above them, and there's a new structure. So I don't personally know exactly how much credence to give to that, but it is a it's a correlation at the very least. And I
You're
do.
a big baseball guy, and you know how modern day baseball is run between managers in the front office sitting
Oh,
there saying,
absolutely.
let's take Jose Berrios out after 4 innings or whatever. Third time the order's coming up, it's no matter what, even if he's playing lights out, he's coming out. And Kyle Dubas is also a pretty big baseball guy. And to me, I think that was generally how it was run. I think we got a peek under that hood in the Amazon Prime series. Like they were having conversations where I just couldn't believe what we were hearing. So, for example, after there was a game after Arizona, in that series, or it wasn't Arizona because it was the all Canadian division, but there was a game where they just played terrible. And I'm thinking Arizona because that was last year when he called them out. But the Amazon Prime was the some other, they played some bad team, they played terrible, and he called something out after. And Matthews kind of responded through the media. And they showed the next day, and Sheldon goes to like knock on Dubas's door. It almost looked like a teacher and principal type of interaction where he kind of wanted to explain his side of the story. And I just found the whole thing so bizarre. I was like, why are you even talking to him about this? And like, you're the coach, like you're in charge. Like you have, it's like the opposite. It's like you have the lineup card, buddy. Like it's got to be you. And I thought that was weird. There was a point in the series where he also kind of like looked at Dubas and was like, Jack Campbell's the starter in the playoffs? Question mark. And Dubas was like, yeah. And then they were like, yeah, okay. And I found the whole thing so bizarre because he's the coach. Like he's got to be in charge. And players are not stupid. I think a lot of people that listen to this have probably played sports or been around sports, whether it's hockey or something else. Like, you know if the guy in charge is the guy in charge or not. And I found some of those things where I was sitting there going, like, why is he, there's a difference between like making conversation and going to him for like the decision or like explaining to him what happened. And, it just the he definitely seems a little bit more empowered and emboldened to call things out, stick to his guns, dig in a little bit more on things. Like he hasn't walked a single thing back that he said all year this year.
And that's a big deal from a leadership standpoint. Like, the moment you walk something back, a day later, like, there's a difference between saying, I act, like, I don't know, I had some kind of Tortorella-esque outburst, guys. I'm sorry it got away from me. But like, that's not really Sheldon Keefe as a human being. When Sheldon Keefe speaks, he tends to be relatively measured, even if he's calling somebody out. So when he does that, and in previous years, like you said, and he walks it back the next day, like, it just makes him look weak and ineffectual as a leader. Like you said, people know where the power is. And also, when Dubas left, and this is not the direction I expected the beginning of podcast to go, we will get back to what's
Yes,
going
we
on with
will
the
get back
Leafs.
to it, but I thought this was
But
important.
final thought on this is that when Dubas left, like, so many of the players commented on their relationship with Dubas, and I can't construe that as an I can't be like, that's a huge negative necessarily, but it is a little bit odd, and I'm not sure there are that many GMs that are like that. And I don't envision Brad Treliving having sort of the same kind of cordial relationships with his players, partly just from a generational standpoint, and that's probably a positive because, it's the, like, don't label your cows if you're a farmer type situation.
Another 100-plus point season for the team. Matthews is locked in. Nylander's not locked in. I mean, for all the talk of, yeah, I mean, if you go back and look at some of the stories written at the time of Dubas's departure, and then when Jason Spezza resigned and left, I like none of them held up. There was no mass exodus. The team is 100% not in shambles. You might not say they're better, but they're definitely not in shambles. At worst, they're the same. They're a little bit different in terms of the bottom line of how they're getting there. But generally speaking, at worst, they're the same. it's, you know, again, it's going to come down to the top guys do it in the playoffs or not. Like that's really it, which brings us to the lines. And I think there's two big stories for these for this lineup configuration. I think the first story is William Nylander deserves an insane amount of credit because that Tavares Nylander-McMahon line was pretty good. Like good enough that you didn't have to split that up. And I don't think, and it's hard to draw any other conclusion than I don't think Mitch Marner would have responded favorably to if it was him playing with Pontus Holmberg and Matthew Nyes on the third line. Because on paper, there was really no reason to break up that that Tavares, Nylander, McMahon line. Like they were fine. Nylander was going well enough. Like he's approaching 100 points this year. And they're looking at him and saying, play with a guy who's generally played wing this year, who has all of 16 points and is now moving to center. And play with Matthew Nyes, who's having a decent enough rookie season, but he's not even going to hit 40 points. And it's you, even though your line was cruising, it's you that's actually going to go down and play with that line. Like, why else would that humanly happen?
I mean, I guess the rationale, if you want to be very generous to Marner, and I'm not necessarily saying that I do, but in a world where you want to be generous about Marner, you might say that Marner's skill set as a playmaker first means that it is in some ways like a waste of his talent if he's not playing with guys who can really finish. Now, on the flip side of that, I could argue that Matthew Nyes can really finish and is a skilled player, and that Pontus Holmberg is more skilled than maybe those 16 points indicate.
So not only that though, but the second part, which you kind of just almost got me beat me to, is he's played with Matthew Nyes for like 40 games this year. Like it would logically make more sense to say go play with the winger. You've spent significantly more time. Like you have not played with Bobby McMahon at all. Like Bobby McMahon borderline did not exist when Mitch Marner got hurt. Like a lot has changed since Mitch Marner got hurt. Like I know McMahon was coming on and like he already had the hat trick and stuff, so I understand, but I'm saying like in the overall scope of things, like, you know, McMahon was a little bit distance away from still being in like a lock in the top six the way he is now. But you could have said, hey, why don't you go play with the guy that you've already played like 40 plus games with this year? And like you guys can figure it out in weak matchups. And just to pull this up for reference, like the Tavares, Nylander, McMahon third line. Up 52% in shot attempts, almost 60% in expected goals, and up 6-2 in actual goals at 5-on-5 in about 75 minutes together. Like, there was no reason to break that lineup other than I can't look at it any other way and say, I don't think it would have been a favorable response. And we've seen this before. Like, Nylander is always the one that has to go down. Nylander's always the one that has to eat it. He doesn't say anything. He doesn't complain. And it's like I look at his game over the past two. Like he didn't get a point against Pittsburgh, but you know, he by and large creates the first goal because he's ready off the faceoff. He retrieves the puck. He settles the play down and he starts the overarching umbrella play that led to the tap-in for Nyes. He drew the penalty for the second goal. I look at the Jersey game. He set up the first, like he set the stage again for the Nick Robertson goal. He doesn't get a point on that play, but it was, I mean, part of the
That's
product
hugely
there.
him, his ability to maintain that pressure and wheel that puck around. Like he owns a lot of the stake in that goal for
He
sure.
dominated the play on that. And part of it was the Jersey defenseman stick breaking, but it was him that cut through the slot and maintained possession and essentially started a domino effect of the Devils being in disarray. That led to the goal. Like he is doing it without complaining. And he is also doing it, more importantly to me, without it impacting his play. Like it would be very easy for him to be like, we've already made the playoffs. Look who I'm playing with. It, you know, I'm taking my foot off the brakes or taking my foot off the gas a little bit here and altering things. But He is still performing at a ridiculously high level. He is impacting games in that role. He's still playing a ton. And so I have a lot of time for what he's doing. I think it's worthy of a ton of recognition. I hope fans can understand that because there's a lot of star players, and sometimes we just look at it within the bubble of the Leafs, but there's a lot of star players across the league that would not be content to do what he's currently doing. Like they would make noise about it. It would be a story for among a number of stars. So that's the first thing of the line configuration. It's Nylander deserves a ton of credit because he's carrying it. And if you watch often, he's basically playing center in the defensive zone. There's a lot of times where he's just swooping down low himself and he goes, yeah, I'm just getting a puck and I'm leading this breakout all on my own. I'm not waiting for Pontus Holmberg experiment at center to play defense down here.
Another thing too is we saw briefly lines with hit like him, Domi, and Bertuzzi in the past, and it really didn't hold up. Like there was a reason to be skeptical that this configuration with Nylander down with these guys, especially Nyes, who again is not some kind of defensive absolute disaster or anything, but he's also, he's a very young player who has to build that component of his game. Holmberg, who has not played a lot of center, especially the third line center. Like you could have imagined a world where these guys get absolutely caved in, and instead they've done really well. Like I think their shots are 12-8 for the Nyes version. Again, it's a small sample, expected goals over 50%. And your boy Holmberg too, like very critical
He's
on the
a good
Nyes
hockey player.
goal and on the Robertson goal. Like he is taking up exactly the space he needs to be taking up in the crease, boxing out the defender, creating room for other guys. And again, like talk about not getting points, but being relevant to the play. Like he's done a really good job as well in a way that's given them something to think about with that configuration. But I want you to get to the second thing on your list there.
The second thing is Mitch Marner needs to buy in. And it's couple parts to that. So one, he's only played three games and he's coming back from most likely a high ankle sprain, even though he denied that injury without confirming what his actual injury was. I think we all have eyes and have seen the replay, and it's almost certainly that. And that's a tough injury to come back from. We saw it with Timothy Liljegren. He really struggled for weeks on end. And so I think it's important that Marner's getting these games in right now to hopefully feel confident on it. I believe that's a really big piece of that type of injury is you need to feel confident again on your ankle and with your body. So, you take some of it with a grain of salt. I think he can be a lot better. I think he knows that. I think part of it is building back up the confidence and the strength there. And so, I'm very curious to see him on Saturday, for example. A couple, he'll have another game between then, a couple more days off to rest. We'll see how it goes. That said, as you noted, they're using that Tavares line as a matchup line. And they were with Nylander there too. When Edmonton came to town, it was Tavares taking shifts against McDavid all night. It was not Matthews. And that's as big a reason as any as Matthews continually going off right now. It's because they've pulled that from him and they're making his life a little bit easier matchup wise so that he can focus on doing what he does, which is be the best goal scorer on the planet. And he's holding up his end of the bargain. So no shot there. But the only way that that works is if that Tavares line does a good job in the matchup line. And I think that there is a little bit of a caught in between right now where Marner's trying to make a ton of plays because he's a really skilled playmaker. But you have to understand if you are in that shutdown matchup role, your job first and foremost is to just take care of things in your own end and to not get scored on. And really where I think that comes to roost is what are you doing at the other team's blue line going through the neutral zone? And so far I see a guy trying to make a ton of plays as if that's a space to create, to use your skill and create. And I think when you are by and large, if you are by and large tasked with you're going against, whether it's Barkov, whether it's Pasternak, that is not a space for you to create plays. That is a space for you to get it deep. And I know that people are going to sit there and say, not the best use of his talents, but I don't care It's about what's best for the Toronto Maple Leaf hockey team. And if your job is match up shutdown line and make sure that you set the table for Matthews and Nylander to eat, then that is your job. And I think there's a little bit of an in-between. So if you look at the Jersey game, it was a little bit like they were creating offense. And I think a big re I think there were two big reasons for that. One, Jersey is icing a terrible roster right now. And two, they were on the road, so it wasn't as direct of a matchup line, right? So, but if you were getting that matchup at home on Thursday and Jack Hughes was in the lineup, the way that Keefe has been running it is Tavares and Marner would be going up against Jack Hughes, and Matthews would be going up against Heeshire as he did in that game. And I'm sure he would again crush that matchup. But if your job is going up against Jack Hughes, then your job is to take care of your own end first and foremost. And I think he's kind of caught in between. I know I have to do these things defensively, but like I also want to get a ton of points and create offensively.
Well, I think that the thing is, he has a lot of experience playing against the other team's best players because they've often done it with Matthews and with Marner. But the difference is, if he's with Matthews, even if they're playing the other team's best line, they don't have to specifically gear their game to a defensive first game. Like the idea when Matthews and Marner are on the ice, like they are in theory, and they should be so good that the idea is that they play their game, and by playing their game, they defeat the other team's best players. And when you have players as good as Matthews and Marner, that's the idea. But if you are the shutdown line, the matchup line, whatever you want to call it, and all of a sudden you're with Tavares, this version of Tavares into his 30s, who to his credit has come on over the course of the year, and this is a role that we don't think of him in, and I think he's performed really well in that role. He deserves a lot of credit. But when you're with Tavares, it's different than being with Matthews. We're like, oh, we're going against the other team's best players, and we're just going to beat them by being us. In this case, when you're Tavares, I don't think you're guaranteed to just sort of beat the other team's top line by being yourself. And as you mentioned, you do have to potentially gear your game in a little bit more of a defensive direction, be a little bit more aware, be a little bit more risk averse. And maybe that is something that he's able to figure out over time, but it's not something that he's necessarily used to doing. At the end of the day, if you're going to be this guy who is getting Selke trophy consideration, and this is going to be a big part of your identity that you're this ultimate two-way guy, you have to be able to be this ultimate two-way guy. And I don't know, it's
I don't think
important.
he needs to figure it out. I think he could do it right this second. I think it's a matter of him buying into that and being a little bit part of the greater good for the team. I think that is ultimately the issue.
I think it would also help if the power play was going too, right?
Yeah.
Because then he would feel like he's getting his opportunities in that arena, and therefore he doesn't need to. And I'm not saying he sort of cheated for offense in some profound way, but it would make it more palatable if things were happening on the power play, which in theory they're going to. We haven't seen it yet, but you would believe that in theory that will happen at some point. Because if you think about this line on paper, like McMahon is also probably your best defensive option out of the left wingers too. Like he's a better option than Knies. Bertuzzi is a bit of a weird defensive player because he has some of his very like dramatic moments that are good, and he gets some crazy blocks, and I think he's good at sort of simplifying the game when he has to and flipping the puck out. But at the end of the day, McMahon's size, speed, disruptiveness, like he's the guy you want defensively. So if Marner is your best defensive right winger and McMahon's your best defensive left winger, you got yourself a defensive line.
On paper, it makes sense what they're trying to do. And the funny part of it all is Marner isn't cheating for offense. You know, it's not as if he's blowing the zone and, you know, leaving defensive responsibilities. Really, all it is I think there's probably a couple plays a period where he's trying to overdo it, making plays, as opposed to let's just be aware and honest about the situation. It's a lot easier if you get the puck deep, if you know, set up a Bobby McMahon forecheck kind of thing. If you're a little bit more strategic, putting a puck into a corner that sets the table. I mean, McMahon is obviously not just big and strong, but he's fast. He'll get to pucks if you put them in the right spots for him through the neutral zone. I think the getting caught is he's trying to, you know, he's looking for tic-tac-toe plays with guys that are not tic-tac-toe players. He is looking to gain the zone with possession and make heads-up plays while he's playing against the other team's best players. And the Leafs don't necessarily have a defense pairing where you could look and say, well, it's okay if you don't, if you mess up this play, that defense pairing will cover for you. And the other two lines, I think, are by and large holding up their end of the bargain so far. And it's not to say that Tavares Marner line has been bad. I could see the areas for exploitation. And if you think back to the Florida series last year, the very first game, they actually started with Tavares and Marner against the Tkachuk line. If you remember the very first game, that was their plan going in, and they got eaten alive in the first period. And Keith switched it after that. He said, all right, well, this obviously can't be a thing. And they put Matthews against them, and it settled things down. And if you go back and look at the quotes, Keith basically acknowledged as much after. It was, you know, we didn't start well, but after we made the adjustments, which was basically Matthews is going against Tkachuk and we're not going to let this guy run us over. Things settled down and we were fine. And then I think that they thought they would be fine going into game two, and they scored two early ones. And anyways, that whole thing just kind of fell apart. But like, they did try that last year, and a big part of it has to be Marner has to buy in. And I'm sure when they built that last year in the playoffs, they went, what a lot of people seem to do is say Marner is one of the best defensive right wingers in the game. So if he is, then he should be able to handle that matchup. Like, he would be going directly up the same wall that Matthew Tkachuk's going up. So they, you know, I don't think it's a matter of him figuring it out in terms of he does have to make adjustments, but I don't think it's very hard for him to figure out what those adjustments are. I think he has to buy into making those adjustments to make it the best possible version of itself. And I conversely look at someone, you know, in Matthews right now, who's obviously pursuing the goal, the 70 goals. And to me, Matthews isn't really changing his game to get there. He's playing within himself. He talked about it this week. It's, you know, I want to make sure I take care of things. He's definitely been cheating the game. Domi is 100% overpassing.
Domi is feeding him to a hilarious degree.
Like, but I'm not watching Matthew saying this guy is going way out of his way here or doing anything extraordinary for him.
No, but when he says it doesn't matter at all, like, he's lying.
That part. I'm just talking about him not going out of his way to get it. Like, he's playing his game within himself. And I just want to see Marner get there, playing the game within himself, as opposed to, I think he's trying to push a little bit more for offense. I think he needs to let that come a little bit more naturally, make sure he's taking care of things defensively, realizing that he is in a matchup role. And if you have that Matthews, Bertuzzi, Domi line humming, and you have Nylander doing his thing on a third line, that's the best possible version, I think, of the team.
It is really interesting to see what happens with this Matthews, Bertuzzi, Domi iteration. Like, there's clearly really strong chemistry there. The results are really good. Like, if you look at right now, 5-on-5 minutes, they're out shooting opponents 92-46, outscoring them 14-7.
Is that good?
Expected goals are even better than that, 68.35%. Like, they are absolutely dominating. And like you referenced before, the idea where people were thinking, oh, if anything goes wrong, Sheldon Keefe's going to reach for the parking brake. And that is the interesting thing for me, because the line is clearly effective, but at the same time, it does change the way he wants to play the matchups. And if Tavares and Marner are not getting the job done, like, it is very quick for him to say, I'm going to put Matthews and Marner together. I'm going to play them against the other team's best players. I think the trickle down effect of that is that finding the right place for Domi in the lineup, finding the right place for Bertuzzi in the lineup, isn't quite as easy. And so by having them with Matthews, you know, there was so much talk over the course of the season, and we may see it again in the playoffs if Domi becomes a center again, goes to third line. There's so much talk about how do you hide Domi's defensive deficiencies. Well, suddenly he's on this first line and he's feeding Matthews, and it's a great duo. And Domi has some of the most 5-on-5 assists in the NHL. And the moment you reach for Marner, you have a bit of a Domi problem again, and figuring out exactly how he fits within the context of the team. So Bertuzzi's a little bit easier. I think he's a little bit more versatile line to line, but this is such a great use of Domi's talents, and it's working so well that I think there is a level of concern if you become panicked and feel the need to do what you've done before, that you're going to create a different problem that's going to pop up down the lineup.
This has always been the recipe for success for Matthews. And, you know, and honestly, they've probably had better players flanking him before doing it. And Bertuzzi and Domi seem to be, you know, I don't mean this in an insulting way, but it's almost as if the best possible version was when it was Hyman and Marner, right? Hyman was the forechecker, Marner was the playmaker, Matthews is the goal scorer. And now it's Bertuzzi is the forechecker, Domi is the playmaker, and Matthews is obviously still the goal scorer. The difference almost seems to be that because those players aren't, you know, they aren't as elite, and that's not offensive, that's just the reality. I don't think anyone's going to say Domi's as good as Marner. I think Matthews is a little bit more involved in both of the other aspects of the game because I think it's easy to get complacent in lulls when you go, Marner's going to, you know, lap the zone and set me up in the high slot or do something spectacular and create for me, and all I have to do is pull the trigger. He looks just a little bit more involved in terms of how he's getting after the puck, how he is enforcing his will on the game. And I almost sometimes kind of watch and go, I wonder if he know, you know, because the players are just a little bit like lower than he's used to, I have to get more involved and I have to be more assertive in how I play because I can't rely on them necessarily the same way, which is again not to say that they're bad. It's not a knock on Bertuzzi and Domi. I mean, Zach Hyman's going to make Team Canada. He's third in the league in goals. Marner's been over a point per game all but his rookie season in the league. Those are exceptional, exceptional players. So it's not a knock, but I do find Matthews a little bit more assertive, a little bit more aggressive, and playing in straight lines because of it.
It's 100% true. Like, if you think about Domi and Bertuzzi, one aspect of that is they're both kind of lightweight guys. Like, people forget that Bertuzzi is kind of a small guy, poundage in the 180s listed. Like, there are some big defensemen who can easily kind of knock Bertuzzi on his butt. You know, not that Marner's some amazing force on the boards, but he's just able to pick the puck the way certain elite players are. Domi's qu not quite at that level. Like, if Matthews wants the puck, you know, sometimes he's got to go get it himself with this configuration. And he's, you know, again, there's so few limitations in terms of what this guy's capable of doing. He can go do that. He is big. He's strong. We know how good his stick is in terms of creating takeaways and picking the puck off the wall. But he does have to be a little bit more involved. Like, he can't float to his spot and hope the pass will arrive there. Domi might try to get it there, but it's not getting there as often as it would with Marner. And Bertuzzi is a crafty forechecker and a willing forechecker, but there's going to be situations where he gets wiped out. Like, he is a player who spends a lot of time on his butt. That's the reality with Bertuzzi, and I'm a big Bertuzzi believer, big Bertuzzi guy, but that's just the reality. And so, like, I did a piece at The Athletic earlier this week on Tuesday, talk about things that the Maple Leafs haven't really tried but might at some point. And one of them was McMahon at some point on the first line, if they draw the type of matchup where they feel like they need more toughness on the wall to get the pucks for Matthews. But right now, he's doing it himself and he doesn't really need anything. And those two guys are giving him exactly what he needs.
Yeah, I also look at Bertuzzi and say he's really good in front of the net, and he's also been good on the forecheck. You look at the Mark Giordano goal; it was Bertuzzi that hustled in as F1 off the faceoff to create the overall turnover in the corner, which then led to Matthews as F2, which is what you want him, the second forechecker, and there, you know, retrieving and poking it back up to Giordano, who shot it. It was very, this is what you would expect of this line. Bertuzzi is the first guy in. Matthews is the follow-up guy, which is where he's best because you want him to have the puck on his stick and he's really good at getting it back. But you want just Bertuzzi being the guy that disrupts the initial play. And then you have Domi kind of floating around as whatever the rover and option support, well, you know, you name it. So I also look at Bertuzzi and say, and we, I think now is probably, do you have anything else to say about the lines before we shift to power play?
No, I think we're from a time perspective, we gotta keep it rolling.
So power play. The first thing is I was actually encouraged by the power play against the Devils. I was generally watching that game going, I don't think the power play is really going to be that much of a problem. Their entries were cleaner. They created a ton of chances. They had the disallowed goal, which honestly, I thought that was a goal. So all that to say is it, I generally wasn't worried. They had a ton of zone time. They had, you know, they created a number of opportunities. Matthews had that tip in front, and Tavares just missed the rebound after. That's the kind of play that usually ends up being a goal for them. They had a, you know, a good number of point shots. McCabe tried to put one through with the second unit with Bertuzzi standing all alone in front. He just sailed it a little bit high and wide for Bertuzzi to not be able to get the tip. What I will say though is I still strongly believe that Bertuzzi should be on the top unit in front of the net. I actually found myself, the biggest complaint I had about the power play is I found a number of times Matthews or Nylander or Marner had the puck up top and they looked to the net and Tavares wasn't standing in front of it. There were multiple times where Tavares just pulled high. It was entirely bizarre to me. I was kind of watching, you know, it was one of those, what do you think you do here? Because what you should be doing is standing in front of the net. That is your job. You have no other jobs here. Your job is to stand in front and watch the other guys pass the puck and shoot. That is it. And I rewatched the game this morning as well. If you go through, you'll see a ton of power play chances where there's one in particular where Matthews curls up top and you could see him kind of cocking it back and he looks up and Tavares just pulls to the high slot and there's no one in front of the net. No one, not a Jersey player, not Tavares, not a soul. And you could see Matthews kind of, you know, it's almost as if he turned his head, but not really, just to kind of look and go, well, what, like, I'm going to sift a wrister through here. That's not going to do anything, right? Whereas you look at the goal that was disallowed, they had a ton of traffic. What did he do? He just pulled it in and sifted a shot through. And again, I thought that should have been a goal, and that would have been two straight games with the power play goal. But I was encouraged by their zone time. I thought they were zipping the puck around pretty good. I actually thought the ice was terrible in Jersey. You don't usually see Matthews and Marner and Nylander, for that matter, bobble pucks the way that they were on the power play. And so I don't know if the ice was just awful or what was going on there, but that was bizarre to me. But they were there. They were there in the zone. Even if you go back to the Pittsburgh game, Marner misses a breakaway. And then they obviously scored on the next power play. I know that that first power play wasn't good. It was also an abbreviated power play that, which is also kind of weird. If you get a breakaway on a power play, you feel pretty good about it one way or the other. You score on the other one. It, you know, the first game against Montreal, I'm not gonna, they had one power play. It was terrible, but they only had one. It was Marner's first game back. I'm not gonna read too much into that. So by and large, if I look at that progression, it was one power play, didn't go well. Marner's first game back, whatever. Second game, abbreviated first power play. You did create a breakaway out of it. You scored on the next one, even though it wasn't your, you know, normal power play setup. It was a power play goal. And that's probably the biggest thing that Tavares can say for being on the power play is that opening faceoff, right? Because he's good at winning it. And we've seen a few goals now in the past week because he's won it. But other than that, I think Bertuzzi is significantly better in front of the net at this point. I think he's craftier. I think he's dirtier in front. And I think he's also better at pulling a defender in against him, which then makes it a 4-on-3 amongst the other guys.
He's also
So
got like a nifty tight area pass in him that you
yeah,
don't expect in a way that Tavares is a little bit more straightforward at the net.
he's a good passer, and he's also just very annoying on the forecheck. I thought Ryan O'Reilly last year was excellent at retrieving pucks. I loved Ryan O'Reilly on the power play. If there was a loose puck after a shot attempt, he was a dog at getting it back. I don't think Bertuzzi's as good, but I think he's probably somewhere between what O'Reilly was and what Tavares is in terms of retrieving pucks, which is to say, I think he's a little bit better than Tavares. He also just, he's kind of quirky about how he go, you know, it's like he's diving at plays and he has all these little dirty little rubs and tight, and he's always running greasy interference. He has a weird way to go going about it that's super unique to him, but it's ultimately effective. And so, yeah, by and large, I think he understands his role better. I think he's better at just going in front and being a menace than Tavares, who I think is probably a little bit better at moving off puck, but they don't really need that. They need a guy who's just going to be a problem in front of the net. So I'm encouraged by the power play. I think it's been getting better progressively over these three games. Again, they create the zone time that they did against Jersey. I think they're going to score more often than not. Again, I thought that they scored against Jersey. I don't know why they didn't challenge it. I watched it a ton of times. I couldn't understand why it wasn't a goal, other than Jake Allen complained and the refs, who definitely had no proper vantage point to make that determination on their own, kind of caved to it and called it off.
Yeah, I mean, I think that going in, the assumption was Marner's absence is a huge part of the results we're seeing, and that when he gets back, you're going to see a better product. And that has certainly been the case. You know, because there's so much proof of concept for these big top four forwards and Riley, like it's a very easy lever for Keefe to pull. What I want to see is sort of the flexibility we talked about earlier in terms of him spreading out the forwards, like a little bit of flexibility on the power play. Like Marner, Matthews, Nylander have to be there no matter what. They have to be there. But then, yeah,
And they
I
should be
or
there. It's
no,
not like
it's
a
not
jail
some
sentence.
like,
Like,
yeah,
you
it's
want
not
them
about
there.
massaging egos. It's like it's an elite passer and two
Yeah.
elite shooters. They got to be there. But Bertuzzi for Tavares, I've got plenty of time for that. You know, I don't think Liljegren has really shown that he needs to be there instead of Riley. But if Riley struggles for a couple games in the playoffs, I'm open to putting Liljegren there. If the whole thing is not working, I'm open to trying something five forwards. What I'm not open to is what we've seen in previous playoffs, where just like we're going to run out this unit because we believe in it. And it's going to go, if it goes cold, we're not going to make any adjustments. Like I understand as a starting point, Riley, big four, sure. What we haven't seen is enough willingness to make tweaks. And again, like you said, Keefe has shown more of that over the roster as a whole. So maybe it's more likely to think about that come playoff time. But it's, yeah, they're at a good starting point. Like that's the reality. When you have those guys and you have Riley, like that is a good starting point. That is where most teams would want to be. If you want to worry about various reasons the Leafs might not succeed in the playoffs, I suppose that's on the list because of the history, but there's no way to spin that as a weakness of this team.
Yeah, and to your point, if they run with that that top unit and they do well, awesome. If they don't do well and you're, five, six, seven games into a series and they continually get run out, not performing well, that is the thing to me. That does lend more to past playoffs and fireable offenses, right? You cannot justify that. They have more than enough options that they could. Whether that's simply swapping Riley for Liljegren, whether that's simply swapping Tavares for Bertuzzi, whether that's doing something even more drastic, obviously it's entirely inexcusable if they go that route. So I'm looking at it. I get the trepidation. They've obviously last year was the first year they've essentially been good on the power play in the Sheldon Keefe era. I just with Marner back, it was watching again the zone time, the entries were cleaner. It's generally a recipe for success for this unit. If they're gaining the zone and they're setting it up, these guys are too good not to score. If, when they've had failures in the past, it's been they've not been able to set up very well and they've not been able to create. And then, especially early on when Matthews wouldn't play the one-timer side and do those kinds of things, it just all the pieces are there. I think it's trending in the right direction at the right time. If I was, in a weird way, the glass half full would be they went cold at the right time before they're about to go hot at the right time. The glass half empty would be the power play's been terrible in the playoffs before, and this is just, this is the beginning of the end for it, which I think is how a lot of people are feeling. I was just kind of watching them snap it around with Marner back. I did not even compute the power play without Marner, to be honest. I know that they were terrible and that was a problem. And it just showed to me how important Marner is on the power play for all the other things we've said about him on this podcast. He's a superstar and he makes a big difference on the power play. And having him there is night and day. So I really didn't compute the past month without him there. I was always just kind of thinking, oh, well, we'll leave it to when Marner comes back. And if they look bad with him, then that's a whole different can of worms. But I've seen progression in three games, where I would like to think that continues over the next week, and then hopefully they're, fine-tuned and sharp and ready to go come playoff time. And I think to that effect too, not particularly on the power play, but just in general, I think we're seeing Morgan Riley kind of round into form. I thought he was excellent against Pittsburgh in particular. They don't have a lot of puck movers back there. That's just the reality. It's a meat and potatoes defense, and that Pittsburgh game was one where I genuinely sat there and went, it would have been nice to have Timothy Liljegren tonight. because they were struggling to get the puck out at times.
Yeah, and as you said, like, it's going to become more meat and potatoes when Edmondson comes back, because he's about as meat and potatoes as it gets. But obviously, Liljegren is a bit of a counterbalance to that. And before we get out of here, because we are a little bit low on time, I do want to address one of the kind of dominant storylines in the last couple of days, which is the idea of the value of, resting, load management. We've got 4 games left in the season. How much do you think fighting for the second spot in the Atlantic is worth? Because it is within reach. They have a game against Florida. They would need Florida to lose at some point, but I don't think that's totally outrageous to assume, considering Florida hasn't been that good, to be honest, over the last couple of weeks. I think they're 4-4-2 in their last 10 games.
They
Like,
haven't been good since the trade deadline.
so is. I mean, it's funny because the Leafs' home ice advantage has not really been a tangible advantage for them
They
this
have not
year.
been
So
good at home this year.
is that something that you're thinking about? Like, oh, this is every game needs to be fought for the points because there's still something in play in the standings? Or would you be considering, let's give Marner another day off because we just want to make sure he's totally okay? Let's give some of these guys who've played every game a day off. Let's consider with Matthews, or is there too much to play for in terms of locking in relatively new lines and giving them more reps and things of that nature?
I don't think it's too much to play for, so I think that's first and foremost. But I think that there's levels to it. So I don't think it matters for Matthews. I think he's a horse. I think he's in the prime of his career. I think he could easily just play out the string of the season. Maybe you sit him the last game because the back to back. But even then, the last game is a Wednesday, and then presumably the Leafs won't play again until Saturday. So more than enough break for him. The one guy that I really look to for it is John Tavares. I thought first and foremost, I thought John Tavares coming back from the All-Star game break was really good. He
Oh,
looked
yeah.
rested and he was excellent coming back from the All-Star break. So I've been thinking about that one in particular this week where I go, he's a guy I would like to get a night off because he's older. We've seen him be more effective after break. And he's not a horse anymore. That's just the truth. He is a very good player still. He's very effective at what he does. If you give him some time and space, he will make you pay. But he genuinely needs some time and rest. Obviously, if Marner's ankle bothers him at any point, he should sit. If it doesn't, he should play because I think he does need the reps coming back from it to what we just talked about. I think he needs to feel confident on it. I think he needs to feel strong on it. I think the only way you're going to do that is by playing games. It's not going to be by practicing. It's going to be by playing games. Because he needs to be in game situations. So he's a guy that should play unless it bothers him. I don't think it matters for Nylander. Nylander has an extra gear quite literally whenever he wants to. If he's a minute into his shift and he's gassed, but he has a 2-on-1, he will absolutely find another gear.
An
I also
extra
just,
offensive gear, to be
yeah.
clear. It rarely seems to show up on the other end of the ice. And I'm a big Nylander guy, but
As we
it's
lap up
quite it.
Nylander on this podcast episode, I also just wanted to give like a very quick recognition to he had a 2-on-1 with Simon Benoit
Oh,
and he
yeah.
actually passed it to him. And I died because, I mean, a couple months ago when the Leafs were like, they needed to win games because they were a little bit questionable in the standings, he had a 2-on-nothing with Pontus Holmberg against St. Louis, a 2-on-nothing. And he was like, there's 0% chance I'm passing this guy. And Pontus Holmberg's actually a forward. And he looked at Simon Benoit on a 2-on-1 up 4-2 and went, yeah, I'm gonna try to get him one here. That was all that was. There is a less than 0% chance Nylander would have even acknowledged that he existed if that was a real game against a real team in a meaningful situation. But I had so much respect for him sitting there going, I'm gonna try to get this guy one right now on an actual goalie, which Benoit hasn't done this year. He scored an empty net against Winnipeg. I loved that moment so much. But again, Nylander, not a guy that needs rest. I do think if they could sit Nyes for a game, which we talked about, I would do it. I think you saw a little bit of the uptick of Nyes going to the fourth line last night and what that looked like. And that was really, to me, like that was what I was talking about. It's you give him a little bit, just a little bit to, make him a little bit uncomfortable, rest up, view the game in a little different way. I ultimately think the most effective would be just one game. Sitting up top, resetting a little bit, and coming back ready to go. But I think you saw a good version of that against New Jersey when they said go play on the fourth line, and he was a beast in that game. He was unreal, threw a big hit, could have scored easily multiple times. So, you know, and again, coming from a college schedule, I think it's nice to buy any time off you can for him. But I look at the other guys and by and large go, I think it's fine. I think Domi could easily play. I think Burt could easily play. It's a bit more of a case-by-case basis. I think Brody, who's been actually really solid and I think is unquestionably in the playoff lineup to start, he's played over 20 minutes since he's come back every single game. He has 6 points in his last eight games. He's been legitimately good. And he's a top penalty killer for them. I think he should easily be in the lineup. But if they could get him another game of rest, I would call it. You know, again, he's not a spring trick, a chicken. Like, he's a 1990. So at this point, which is old in the NHL, sorry to say. And so he, to me, is a guy that shades towards if you could get him a game. I don't know how Jake McCabe's doing, but if you could get him a game, I would do it. So case by case, I would try to play Ilya Samsonov as much as possible. Like, not as much as possible, sorry. I would try to split them. I wouldn't play Martin Jones. I know people have thrown that out there, but at this point, there's five games left. If Samsonov gets two and Wohl gets three, I think you're fine. So I think a little bit of rest is important. I think the priority is going to the playoffs feeling good about yourself. And in a weird way, I actually don't mind them starting on the road. As much as I do like home ice and I think it's worth pursuing, I don't think it's enough that I would forego rest and health.
Yeah, I think it's sort of a win-win situation where we know that there's benefits to being at home and in your routine, and the statistics over the long haul would tell you that having home ice is useful, but we also just know the team has performed really well on the road. Also, if they end up in Florida, you know that there'll be some fans there who are cheering for the Leafs. They'll have a little bit of support there. It's not going out to a different time zone or anything like that. So I don't think it's particularly detrimental. I would lean towards rest if possible. Brody is a great candidate, as you mentioned. Like, he's played a lot of games. There's a lot of minutes on his body. If you could get that, and he doesn't even need to bounce back, as you said. Last eight games, 6 points, skating almost 22 minutes a night. Leafs outscoring opponents 10-4 in his 5-on-5 with a ton of expected goals. Like, he's been
Seems good.
good.
Seems
He's
good.
been more active in the offensive zone. Like, he's skating downhill and making passes towards the net, which is not what we always see from him. I like what he's done a lot recently. I would look to give him a game. Jake McCabe, they always bring up on the broadcast that he's the most hit man in the NHL in terms of hits received. So give that guy
Give this man a rest.
a rest. Matthews and the 70 goals is a little bit complicated. I don't
I don't
know. I
think you
feel
could
like
feasibly look at him and say, you know, if he's at 69 or even 68, hell, even 67 going into the last one, I don't know how you could look at him and say, unless Matthews came to you and said, I'd rather sit. And if he did, then fair enough.
And it's
I think
not like
Matthews
last year
deserves the
where he
call.
hasn't been healthy, right? Like, he's been healthy over the course of the season. He's been strong. There's no reason to believe he's not ready for this. Yeah, I think it's
He's
pretty
earned the
simple.
right to make the call either way. And I would respect either way what he did. Now, if he went balls out crazy for it and got hurt, I would not respect that. But I don't see him doing that. As I was saying, I think he's very much playing within his game and he's just scoring because he's unbelievable. I don't see him, you know, jumping cartwheels to do it. You know, they showed him at the end. Of course, he wants to get on. He's their best defensive center and they're trying to protect a lead. I didn't
He wanted that
sense.
a little bit. He there
Sure, he
was it.
did.
You could see it in his eyes when Tyler Bertuzzi scored. There was that, like, I'm happy for you, but I'm not happy for you in
I
his
actually felt
eyes.
different. I felt when that went in, I went, that's a guy that, you know, he was happy for him, and that was it. But he didn't look disappointed to me. It looked like, all
Maybe I
right,
was
like we're
reading too
good.
much. I was looking past his eyes, and into his soul. I felt there was a kernel of disappointment, but again, not in
Yeah.
some asshole-ish type of way where,
No.
like, he doesn't care his team's gonna win and all. Like, I don't have any complaints about Matthews, because if I were in his position, I'd want every shot at this as well. It's a really cool milestone and amazing accomplishment. His teammates are also, like, constantly talking about it. Like, I think his teammates
Yeah.
legitimately want this for him as well. It's not like they're on a death march. Like, Ovi's I know Washington has been relevant at times this year, but that's only because the Metro has been so garbage and that second wild card's been open. But like, it's not like Ovi's death march to the all-time goals record where you're like, okay, cool. Like, this is a lot of fun
Scored
for
again
me.
last night though against
Oh, he's
Detroit.
doing well.
He's
He's been
been
cooking.
unbelievable.
But I think that Matthews's teammates are probably with him in a more supportive way. Not that people his I'm sure Ovi's a legend among his teammates, but it's a different situation.
I think Tavares is really the biggest one. Riley's missed a bunch of time lately, so I'm not worried about him. I think McCabe would be a good one if you could get him a night off. I think Brody, if you could get him another night off. I would like to see Nick Robertson generally play out the string here. If nothing else, I honestly think he's earned it. I know that there's debate about whether he should be in the playoff lineup. I think he should come in at some point if they're not scoring. I don't think he should start game one, but I definitely think that he has deserved the opportunity and he's earned the opportunity to continue to play games down the stretch here. He scored and he's taken it well. I think, again, people were strangely taking those comments he said at one point when he said, like, I'm not happy, but I understand about getting scratched. I thought it was entirely fair. I mean, he shouldn't be happy. I would find it weird if he did think it was ha if he was happy about it. But he took it well and he's come back in every time, ready to go. I think everyone clearly sees he comes in loaded for bear and then he, comes back to reality. And I think that's part of what they're working on. But it's been a promising season for him. I'd like to see him continue to get games. I think, hopefully Cale Yarncroft's back next week. And I would look for that first game. And not because it's against Florida in terms of the standings, but just because it's the first game of a back-to-back. That would be the game that I would circle to try to have my lineup in. What I would expect my game one lineup to be. And then I would play Cale Yarncroft again the next night against Tampa. But that's when I would look to sit a John Tavares. That's when I would look to sit, a Jake McCabe and a TJ Brody, which they might not want to do both because they both play such big minutes that if they do sit both, it might get
It's
a little bit
ride Mark
weird.
Giordano time. There's
Yeah,
no tomorrow on that. So give
it
him
could get a
22
little
minutes a
weird.
night.
And I don't think you want to look at Joel Edmondson coming back and say, I think you're going to play 22 tonight because these guys are out. I don't think that's Edmondson's game. I think even he would look and be wondering, I don't know about this one. So I get that they have to manage it. I think, again, there's a couple of D-men I'd like to see sit. I'd like to see Tavares get a night off or two. I think they're in good shape to manage Samsonov here. I think, a lot of the other guys are young or in their prime, or I'm not too concerned about, or they, Bertuzzi's rolling, no reason to sit him. Domi's rolling, no reason to sit him. McMahon is, he's a spring chicken out there. He's young. He's not playing all 82 this year. He's moving around great. If anything, you want him to continue to get reps. I think Knies could benefit from a night off. Holmberg, I could probably take or leave. I think last night also showed you would like Connor Dewar in for the PK. I think he has a spot in the lineup come playoff time. And I also think Ryan Reeves was, it was smart to sit him. Prior to that game, he had fought five times in his last 14. Like, that is a lot. And you also want Reeves in there loaded for bear game one, and you want him feeling good about that.
Yeah, I mean, you've got an older player who plays a role that's unbelievably physical. Giving him nights off when that's possible is a smart thing to do. We are going to leave it there, guys. We appreciate you listening in this week, and we will be back with you again next week. As per always, we don't have an exact schedule on that, but we will have to kind of figure out how we're going to handle Leafs playoff time. We don't have firm plans on that, but we will communicate as best we can. We appreciate again, listening and also reviewing and giving us ratings and letting people know about the podcast, all the things you guys do. We'll talk to you again soon.